Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.
He's a classic winner, he's a multiple Group 1 winner, but he has traded a very successful career in the UK for riding here in Hong Kong, and joins me now on Luck on Sunday in what I can only describe as the pouring rain at Sha Tin. Andrea Atzeni, thank you for your patience today. Hopefully we're not going to get completely drenched sitting here, but you won't mind, because this has been a very fruitful mission so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Nick. And yeah, it has. You know, it's been something different for me. Obviously, I've been here now in Hong Kong for, I think it's about 8 months. And it feels like I arrived yesterday. Time has gone very quick, which is obviously a good thing. When time goes fast, you're obviously having a good time. And but yeah, no, it's things that have gone pretty well so far. I started off pretty good, you know, riding my first winner at a second meeting in Hong Kong, and it just all picked up from there. I've got a lot of support from most of the trainers and a lot of different owners, and I must say it's probably gone a little bit better than I expected, but I'm that stage now where, you know, you just want more and more, and I had a target to achieve, which I have already, and now I'm hoping to achieve a different target in a sense of numbers of winners, and at the moment it's looking quite positive.
So what was your target when you arrived?
I must say I was hoping to ride 30 winners for this
which
season.
Is a lot in Hong Kong.
It is. Like, that doesn't sound a lot, but 30 winners in your first season in Hong Kong, it's, I think it's pretty good. And so far I've ridden 36, which is, it's a good number. At the moment I'm fifth on the jockey's table. I've had a couple of setbacks, a couple of suspensions, which sort of put me on the back foot for a little bit. I missed a couple of winners. But now we're up and running again and looking forward to the sort of back end of the season.
So take me back to when you left the UK and what triggered the decision to come. Because it's not as though your career was on the skids or you'd been forgotten about. It was still going okay.
Of course, yeah. I was definitely going, doing well enough to stay in England, and I wasn't planning to come to Hong Kong at all. I was actually looking forward to be a freelance jockey for the first time in 10 years. You know, being a retained rider for so many years, it's my first time since, I don't know, 2014 or something.
So you'd been Sheikh Mohammed Abeid's jockey for 9 seasons?
Correct. And I did 1 season with Qatar Racing.
Yeah.
So that's 10 years as a retained rider. So that was my first season, full season, being a freelance jockey. And I was actually really looking forward to it because it was a different challenge. I was ready for it. And but yeah, and then all of a sudden, I got a phone call from a member of the Hong Kong Jockey Club.
Out of the blue?
Out of the blue, yeah. I wasn't
Didn't see it coming, you weren't courting it, you weren't flirting with them, nothing?
Not at all, no, I didn't. It was on the back of my mind one day I would eventually apply to come to Hong Kong again, because I came here in 2014 for a very, very short period of time. And I knew one day I was going to come back to Hong Kong, not so much as a full-time jockey, maybe just to spend the winter in Hong Kong. But at this stage of my career, it was in the back of my mind.
Fine.
And all of a sudden, this Hong Kong number rang up, and it was a member of the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and he asked me if I would come to Hong Kong as a full-time jockey. And it caught me by surprise, but I left my doors open. I didn't obviously give him a straight answer. Obviously, I put a lot of thought into it, and I spoke to different people that I knew that could, you know, help me with my decision. It's like anything in life, you can speak to as many people as you can, but the end is all down to you. It was down to me whether I was ready or if I wanted to come or not.
And so what was the driving force behind taking the plunge?
I'm not quite sure. It was one of those things. Is I'm at that stage of my career where I'm lucky enough that I've done well enough in Europe to say that, you know, prestige is great, which, you know, that's what you get in UK and in Europe, you know, winning big races, winning all those Group 1s. But at the end of the day, I'm at that stage of my career where prestige can only take you so far. And it comes to down to a little bit to the financial side of it. At the end of the day, I'm not going to be a jockey forever. Mm-hmm. I'm 32. And so I sat down and I thought, well, the only way I can retire in 10 years' time and be financially secure is to come to Hong Kong. And also, I think I just needed a new challenge. I just needed something different. Losing a job with Sheikh Mohammed Obaid, it's like anything. When you lose a big job, it's a little bit upsetting. But it's like anything in life. Nothing lasts forever. I knew that was going to come eventually, and I was prepared for it. And I think I just needed something new, something refreshing. And which coming to Hong Kong, it really done me well.
Why did you lose your job?
I'm actually not quite sure. It came to, obviously, I worked for Sheikh Mohammed Obaid for 9 years, and I became very, very close to Sheikh Mohammed Obaid. I'm actually probably a lot more closer now than I was when I was riding for him.
So and, you're still in quite regular contact?
Yeah, very much so, very much so. I keep in touch with him. You know, we speak every other week. He rings me when I'm in Hong Kong. He actually follows Hong Kong racing too while I've been out here. The reason why I lost it, I'm not quite sure. I think he just came to a conclusion that Sheikh Mohammed Obaid decided to expand his horses with different trainers. Mm. And I must say, all the trainers they decided to send horses, they all obviously had good jockeys in their own stables. So I think he came to a conclusion where he thought, I think he'd rather let the trainers use their own jockeys.
Yeah.
And then it became to a conclusion that, you know, it was a good time for me to him and to part ways, and he's done very well.
But as you say, that takes away that security that you did have.
Mm.
And not many jockeys do have. So when you lose that security, you seek it somewhere else. And now you're seeking it here in Hong Kong. When you first arrived here, after a week, what were you thinking?
To be honest with you, there hasn't been a minute since I've been in Hong Kong that I've regretted my decision. When I have arrived, I've been into Hong Kong before, but I knew this could be, like, I was planning to stay here for a little while. And so I was mentally, my mind is already pretty much here. My mind was in Hong Kong before I even arrived in Hong Kong. So I mentally was pretty much prepared to my new challenge. When I arrived, it was just different. The only thing I was worried about, Nick, before I came to Hong Kong, that whether my riding style was going to adapt to Hong Kong racing.
How did you think it needed to adapt?
Because I'm pretty much a jockey that he likes to get a horse into a nice rhythm, let the horse get comfortable, and then, you know, just let the horse sort of develop into the race, and, you know, and then have a good go at the end. Whether here it happens, everything ups a lot quicker.
So do you have to make things happen here?
100%. Like, you can't just come out of the gates here and say, well, I'll come out and I'll get in some stage and it'll open up for me. It doesn't work like that. Here in Hong Kong, the gates is very important. Gate speed and position is very important.
So you have to be a bit more urgent.
Yeah, a lot sharper. Make decisions a lot quicker than you would anywhere else in Europe. And the race a lot tighter than they would do in Europe. Like, you know, the race fairly tight. And you're riding with some world-class jockeys too. But I must say, I was actually quite surprised how sort of quickly I adapted to the style of racing. And another thing that worried me, that I've always had an agent. Like, I've been a jockey for 15 years, and I've always somebody looking after me, booking my rides or helping me to book my rides everywhere I've been in the world. But in Hong Kong, it doesn't work like this. In Hong Kong, you've got to look for the rides. You've got to book your own rides. You haven't got an agent. So it's all down to yourself. But it's like anything, it takes time. And I'm trying to get around things. But I'm not there yet. But I've only been here 8 months, so.
Because people will say, well, hang on a minute, you only ride twice a week. Happy Valley on a Wednesday, Sha Tin on a Sunday. the rest of the time to enjoy yourself. The purses are great. You're making plenty of money. That is only half the story, isn't it? Well, not even half the story. You're running your own little cottage industry every single minute of the day.
Correct. It's, like I said, because you think you only ride 2 days a week, it's easy. Okay, it's a good thing here, we haven't got the traveling. We don't have to travel far. I live just across the road in Sha Tin, so it takes me 2 minutes to go to work. And then once a week, I go to Happy Valley on a Wednesday night, which will take me 20 minutes to half an hour. So, you know, for that side of things, the traveling, it's brilliant because there's no traveling at all. But for some reason, there's always something to do. Like, we get entries 2 days a week. So we get entries on a Monday for the Sunday meeting and on the Thursday for the Wednesday meeting at Happy Valley. So I have to, we get an email at 2:30. And as soon as the email comes out, I have to go through every single horse, every single race, and trying to get on the best riders I can. Like, say, for example, Wednesday night, I had 7 rides at Happy Valley. The last race was at 10 to 11. I got home about 12 o'clock at night, and I'd say I didn't go to bed until probably 1:30 in the morning. I literally had to go through every single race. I watched every race of the night. I was only 7 races. There was 9 races that night, but I watched every single race. Because I do my own form. I have to, because nobody else does it for me. And then
you're not allowed an agent here.
No, you're not. No, so it's all down to me.
Yeah.
So I had to watch every single race, see, analyse my rides, whether I should have done something different, whether the horse is worth riding next time. And then after done my own rides, the horses I have ridden, then I have to start looking for other horses that were in the race.
Yeah.
That looked like they could win next time or whatever, and just get on the phone and ask for rides.
Are you good at it? Are you getting good at the hustle?
Like, I've never done it before. I don't like asking for rides because I never had to do it. But here, if you don't do it, it's, you know, you have to because it's part of the job. I think I sent my last message on Wednesday night at 1:32 in the morning, asking for a ride.
Did you get one back?
Like, 8 times out of 10, you might not reply, but you have to ask. And same on the Sunday, like I come home from racing after 10 rides, and it's a long day of racing. And I literally go through every single race and trying to pick my next winner. Because if I didn't do it, somebody else is going to do it.
So when you were riding in the UK, I think it's one of your best qualities, but people would tease you for it, for being laid back.
Mm.
Or, you know, pretty chilled.
Yeah.
Was that fair or not?
Yes, for sure. Which is sometimes is a positive thing for certain things, and sometimes it's not such as positive, because it's good to be laid back, because in this sport, you've got a lot more bad days than good days, in the sense that you lose a lot more than you win.
Mm.
So if you let it get to you every time you lose a race, it can't last. But because I'm such a laid back person, I felt like in the last 4 or 5 years, I definitely took the foot off the pedal in England. And I just went through the motions a little bit, which definitely sort of came back to me in the last couple of years. I wasn't getting the support that I used to be getting.
But you didn't realize it at the time?
No, I didn't. It's all down to me because, like I said, I had a good job. I was riding good horses. And when you're having that, you're young, like I was such a young age.
But you're still so young.
Oh, yeah. You think it's not going to end because I've got a great job, good retainer, riding for a shake, I'm riding for most people. This is never going to end. So I definitely took the foot off the pedal, and things definitely quieted down for me in the last few years. And I can only blame myself for that to happen. I didn't struggle, but I should have pushed harder, you know? And I didn't. I regret it, but you can't go back in time. You know, I've done it, I've enjoyed it. Now coming to Hong Kong, it's definitely, like, it's good to be laid back because in Hong Kong it's such a tight system. You get taken off horses every day of the week. And it's such as there's only so many trainers here. So it can upset people, because if you start upsetting people here in Hong Kong, there's only so many people you can upset, because
yeah,
there's only so many trainers, there's only so many owners you can ride for. But to be honest with you, I don't like upsetting people anyway, so it's not in me. It's just got to be fair. And but yeah, you need to get a bit of anger out here and pull your finger out. And unfortunately, when you leave the door and you come racing, it's you on your own. Like, forget about your friends, forget about the colleagues, even when you get home and you get on that phone and you're working, you can't think, just because, oh, my friend rode a horse last time, I'm not going to ask for it.
So you just need to be a bit meaner.
Yeah, which is not me, but unfortunately it's the name of the game.
The other thing, I suppose, about having a naturally laid-back, phlegmatic temperament is that people can mistake that for you not caring.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when, you know, when David Gower, the great cricketer, was in his pomp, because he had a kind of laid-back aura about him, people said he didn't care, or when he got out, he wasn't trying hard. Mm. You were trying hard.
Yeah. But that's very true. I do think people, because, like I said, because I'm such a laid-back person, maybe they thought, you know, just going through the motions a little bit, maybe a little bit lazy, which I probably was. Yeah, maybe some people misjudge me, but I think it's I can only blame myself for something like this. But like I said, I don't regret it. It's the way I am. One thing I would say, I've gained jobs, I lost jobs, I've ridden for so many people, but I've never ever upset anybody. Like I left Qatar Racing a long time ago, and I became very good friends with Sheikh Fahd. He's probably one of my best friends. You know, I finished with Sheikh Mohammed Obaid, and we'll finish on good terms. I'm probably more close to him than I was when I was riding for him. So everywhere I've been, I've always left on good terms, which that's all I wanted. Like, jobs come and go. But one thing I wanted to make sure when I lost Sheikh Mohammed Obaid's job is that between me and him, there was nothing, you know? You know, I wish him all the best. He's having a great season. I think he's got some very good horses, which is great for him. But one thing I made sure that friendship is one thing. Work is great, work comes and goes.
What about adapting to the lifestyle here? How are you finding it? How difficult was it?
One thing I had to do when I first arrived in Hong Kong is getting my weight down. You know, because I was trying to use my weight as an advantage against those bigger jockeys. Because I thought, if I can get to the bottom weight, which is 115, which is A3, I can ride horses that certain jockeys here can't ride because of the weight. So I took my weight, I used my weight as a bit of an advantage. The only thing I struggled with at the beginning was the weather. The humidity was very high.
If anyone's noticed, it's absolutely, I mean, we're doing this in the middle of what can only be described as a monsoon.
Yeah. It is, but this can happen in Hong Kong. But I have adapted quite quickly to the lifestyle. Thing is, with Hong Kong too, I get a lot of time for myself. You know, I spend a lot of time doing other things that I've never done before. Obviously, my partner Emma is here, so we get to spend a lot more time together.
How's that?
It's working. It's one of those things that in England, we never sort of used to see each other. Because I was racing every single day. So I'd come home in the evening, have a bit of dinner, go to bed. Next day, you're up early in the morning, galloping horses, and then
so racing. You're passing like ships in the night in England.
That's right.
Yeah. Whereas actually here, you have to kind of traditionally understand how to live together.
Yeah, which is great. I think it's actually a place in Hong Kong that it'd be a difficult place to be on your own. So having a partner here, it's a big help.
But is it one of those things? It's either going to make you or break you.
100%. Yeah, it is, because you spend so much time together. And it could go either way. Luckily, it's gone the right way. So it's gone good. And like I said, I'm lucky she's here with me, because you need a support. And you need somebody behind you that understands racing. Like, I love racing. Racing is my job. This is what I do. But at the same time, Emma, she understands when I'm not racing and I'm not working, we leave racing behind, because we have a life outside of racing, which you have to. You know, you've got to switch off sometimes. So she understands when I'm working, but when we're out, we're on the holidays or we go shopping, we go whatever, racing stays away from us.
Do you feel now, having done effectively a full season here, do you think this is your life now for the foreseeable future?
Nick, that's very difficult to say, because that phone call 8 months ago just completely changed my life, my career, and it's a phone call I never expected. So you never know what's around the corner. In this moment of time, I must say, like, I'm loving it. I'm really enjoying Hong Kong racing. The Hong Kong Jockey Club has been very helpful. I love the racing style. You know, Sha Tin is a beautiful track. Happy Valley, it's challenging, it's different. But I'm getting around at things.
You need to be up early to ride around Happy Valley, don't you?
But one thing I would say, I've been lucky to ride in England for many years. I've been to Dubai, Japan, everywhere in the world. But financially, it's the place to be. You know, you can race on a Happy Valley on a Wednesday night in a Class 5, which is the worst horses. It could be like a Class 6 at Wolverhampton, like 60 rated horses. And you're racing for $100,000. You know, you're racing for at least £100,000 sterling. And then the prize money just goes up. So financially is very rewarding. And like I said, it's probably one of the reasons why I'm here too. It's going good. I'm hoping, I used this season as a bit of a learning curve, but hopefully next season, if I'm back again, if the club allows me to come back for another year, which it will be great, you know, I could see myself setting up big targets.
Do you think you could be a champion here?
I can't see why not. I've got the weight, I've got the age on my side. I can't see why not. I won't be a champion here one day, and I will try.
The other week you went to Australia and rode a Group 1 winner there for Kieran Maher, and it was a really special moment for you because it was the day of Stefano Kirky's memorial in Australia.
Yeah.
A good friend of yours, a fellow Sardinian. Tell me a little bit about that experience and how you really got a bit of divine intervention.
Yeah, it was tough because when I received the phone call that Stefano had a fall in Australia, like everybody has a fall, and it didn't sound great, but I didn't realise how bad it was. And it was on a Wednesday. I was actually going to the Happy Valley, and I didn't think too much. Obviously, I knew he was going to hospital. And then all of a sudden, the next day, I spoke to his parents, and they were basically on the plane to Australia. They were obviously told that Stefano, you know, was in a serious condition. So they told the parents to fly out. So I spoke to the parents on a Friday, and I said to them, I said, look, I've got a couple of days off next week. If I can't, I'll fly in to come and see Stefano. And basically, I got told that from that Friday to next week, a lot of things could have happened. So, first thing I did on the Sunday, I rode a Sha Tin, and I didn't wait much longer. I just got on the plane, and I flew straight to Sydney that night. And I arrived there Monday morning. Sorry. And I saw Stefan. Stefan was still with us, and he was obviously in a coma. He looked great, like he wouldn't think he had a fall. He was obviously under the machines to keeping him together. And I literally spent 15 hours with him, just sitting with him, talking to him, just hoping there was something, you know, holding his hand. And anyway, I left because I had to come back to Hong Kong to ride at Happy Valley on the Wednesday. And anyway, I rode at Happy Valley on the Wednesday. And the following day, I got a phone call from my sister saying that, unfortunately, Stefano left us. It's one of those things. When I saw him, it was tough. But I can't say I could see that coming because you can never see something like this coming because he can't accept it. He's a young guy. He's 23. He shouldn't leave us at that age. And, I thought I was half prepared for it, but God, when the news came, I still can't believe it now. It's impossible that something like this has happened. Anyway, so he left us, and I rode on the Sunday again, and that Sunday night I flew to Sydney again for his memorial. They did a memorial And so I flew there and spent a lot of time with his parents. It must be tough for his parents because not so much they lost a son. They were on the other side of the world. They're literally 24 hours away from everything else. It's only his mother, his father, and his sister. But one thing I would say, that the Australian Racing Club and the racing community, from the doctors, from the nurses, they've been amazing. Like, they couldn't speak highly enough, the parents, of the way they've been treated in Australia. And I could see that too, the way the racing community was behind Stefano. And Stefano was only there for 4 months. And it was amazing how many people got to know him and how many people supported him. And so long story short, I was in Sydney that Monday for that memorial, and I got a phone call from Kieran Ma when he found out I was in Sydney, and asked me if I could come back on Saturday to ride in the Sydney Cup. And at the time, the horse only had 50 kilos, which is 7.12.
And even you can't do 7.12, can
you? Not in that short period of time. And I said to Kieran, I said, look, I can't do it because it's too light for me. And anyway, on the Tuesday, I was flying back to Hong Kong, and I was on the plane because obviously I had to ride a Happy Valley on the Wednesday. And I got a text while I was on the plane saying the weights went up to 51 and a half. And so I was like, well, great, I'll take the ride. So back to here to Hong Kong. I rode at Sha Tin on the Wednesday night. Thursday, flew back to Sydney. So I was in Sydney. I've been there about 3 times in 3 weeks. And so I got back to Sydney to ride the Sydney Cup. And I went to see Stefano's parents on the Friday night. I sat down with them, and they told me they were coming racing, which I it's unbelievable because, you know, for them, they used to, of going racing, they see their son riding a horse. And for them to turn up on a Saturday, I thought it was unbelievable. Like, fair play to them, how tough they were to turn up at the races, to watch me riding when they used to watching their son. So it must have been very tough for them. And I had a gut feeling it was going to happen because it was too good. Like, I was in Sydney, Stefan is in Sydney, his parents came racing, and I had a gut feeling that something special was going to happen. And anyway, the horse was favourite. We didn't have a great draw. I wanted to get a bit of cover and, you know, get him to relax and get him to finish as well as we could. And the race just didn't plan out the way I wanted. I'd say it's probably one of the worst winning rides I've ever given a horse.
But it didn't matter.
It didn't matter because the horse won. And when I went past the line, it was just special because it's a feeling that you can't explain. And like, I won the Sydney Cup. Stefan was still in Sydney at the time. His parents came racing. And I've been to Sydney twice already, unfortunately, not for good reasons. And I don't know, I had a gut feeling something good was going to come out of it. And lucky enough, I won the Sydney Cup, which it put a smile on my face and it put a smile on Stefano's parents. And but no, it's a day that I'll never forget for good or bad reasons.
Andrea, this season will come to an end here in Hong Kong in July. Mm. And then you'll come back to Europe for a month or two?
Yeah.
And you actually get a summer holiday?
Yeah, yeah.
That'll right. Feel different.
Yeah, because I'm never, you know, usually I've been racing in England for the last 15 years and I never get a summer break unless you get suspended, which I didn't want to get suspended in the summer because that was our busiest time of the year. In Hong Kong, so the last day of the season is the 14th of July, and we get 7 weeks off. So for the first time in 17 years, I'm actually planning a holiday ahead. So I'm going to be spending a little bit of time in England. Obviously, Emma's parents, all her family live in England, so I'm going to be spending a bit of time with them. And I'll probably spend a month in Italy with my family and, you know, just spend time with them. You know, I'm already planning my summer, you know, going on the beach with my family, have a house all together, and go to watch the Palio with my friends, and get a Lake Como with Emma. You know, it's actually for the first time in 17 years I can actually plan a summer holiday, which is great. And like I said, hopefully if the club allowed me, I'll be back here early September.
You made a big impression here. I'm glad it's going so well for you. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.